This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. This month, the La Crosse Community Theater and Viterbo University are hosting community events centered around the story of Holocaust survivor Eva Schloss. And Then They Came For Me is a play about Schloss, a childhood friend of Anne Frank, who experienced many of the same hardships while growing up in Nazi Germany. Schloss herself will be in La Crosse for question and answer sessions with the audience and a speaking event at Viterbo. Joining us to talk about these events are Sarah Adams, director of LCT's production of And Then They Came For Me, and Daryl Klott, Holocaust educator at Viterbo University. Sarah, can you just start by giving us an overview of the plot of And Then They Came For Me?
The play centers around three families and how Eva's family and Ed Silberberg's family met Anne Frank and became associated with her. The play talks about the way that those people survived hardships or didn't in certain cases, because obviously we know that Anne Frank died, but half of Eva's family died as well. And it goes through in a multimedia type production with narration and little vignettes of stories about the whole arc of the story from when they first began hiding to when they moved home after having been in Auschwitz.
You mentioned that there are kind of multimedia aspects of this production. I think that's part of what makes it unique. I wonder if you can go into a little bit more detail about what those are.
We have a screen in the back that will show interviews from about 1990-something, is that right? 1996, maybe, with Eva Schloss and Ed Silberberg. And it also has some photographs that will play throughout the back and some voiceover effects that happen. And in some cases, the actors on stage actually respond to these things and ask questions to their older selves on the screen. It's sort of interesting.
Why did you want to direct this play?
Well, I have a history of studying theater of the Holocaust in college. The opportunity came up when I was in school, and it was such a fascinating thing. And honestly, it is life-changing. You talked about having done, Daryl talked about having done this play and how it really changes people's lives. Well, having taken that class really changed my life. It changed my perspective on a lot of things, and especially really the survival of youth, which this play has a lot to do with, those two youth that managed to survive and the one that didn't in this story. I was asked to do this play, and I couldn't be more proud to be able to actually bring my college education back into this. I never thought I would have a chance to direct something like this on a community theater level.
And Daryl, you know, Eva Schloss will also be speaking at an event at Viterbo, is my understanding. Can you tell us a little bit about that event?
Eva will be with us the evening of Monday, September 18th at 7 p.m. And she spoke in La Crosse on March 26th, 2015. So we're bringing her back. And she is a remarkable woman. She speaks all over the world. She's 88 years old. She's flying in from London. I am so happy that we are partnering with La Crosse Community Theater, that they're going to do this play while she's here. I can tell you that I have sat with Eva while this play was being done up at the Marie Tainter Theater in Menominee. And I sat next to her, and it was one of the most profound experiences of my life. I'm sitting next to Eva, and she's watching herself on the screen, the real Eva who's on the screen, as Sarah just mentioned, and then watching the young woman who's portraying her, and watching her family being marched off to Auschwitz, and knowing that, finding out that her beloved brother Heinz and her father Poppy did not survive, and it is just It is so powerful. And these people in this community get this chance to come to this play. There are three performances. I am so excited because it's the night before Eva speaks at Viterbo, the 17th, and the two nights after she speaks at Viterbo, the 19th and 20th at 7:30 p.m. And she's going to, Marv and I are bringing her to the play. She's going to be sitting in the audience, and she's going to do a Q&A afterwards. It's going to be so powerful. People won't even understand how wonderful this is until it happens.
Yeah, Sarah, as Daryl mentioned, we'll be doing Q&A with the audience after those performances. I mean, what do you hope comes up in those conversations? What do you hope, people really walk away from these sorts of conversations?
I hope that people can see that although this is a story of tragedy, that really it is also a story of perseverance and hope, that she made it through because she was determined to. And, you know, sometimes that has a little bit to do with luck as well, obviously. But really, I think that she talked about people who tried to escape and how they weren't really trying to escape at that point. They had just given up. And she didn't. And part of that, too, was that she was there with her mother, and they had that support and that connection and that love between them that sort of helped them get through together. And I think that that's something that people need to see, that, you know, with people that we love, we can get through together.
This is a story of hope. When I am promoting Holocaust survivors that come to Viterbo, as I have been doing for the last several years, sometimes I'll run into someone who says, oh, I don't want to hear a survivor. I don't want to get depressed. Nothing could be further from that. People walk out of the Fine Arts Center at Viterbo, and they are inspired because these people live through some of the worst, not the absolute worst, but some of the worst that could possibly happen to human beings. And they went on and built successful families and had businesses. Eva had two businesses. I've been rereading one of her books. She has three books, and I've been rereading After Auschwitz, and I am again absolutely overwhelmed with the fact that she could survive what she did. She lived through the most horrendous things. Wait till you meet her. she's a happy woman, and she's had a successful life. She's raised three daughters. She has seven grandchildren. Unfortunately, her husband of 64 years, died the same day Elie Wiesel, July 2nd, 2016, after 64 years of marriage. But hope, it's a story of hope and inspiration, absolutely.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about local events remembering the Holocaust and why they're relevant today. We're here with Daryl Klott, Holocaust educator from Viterbo University, and Sarah Adams, director of La Crosse Community Theater's production of And Then They Came For Me. Daryl, as you mentioned earlier, this is not Eva's first time in the Coulee region. It won't be Eva's first time. She was here in 2015, and later in the show, we'll get to hear her story from that time. But, you know, I wonder what really stuck out to you from that visit in 2015. Mm-hmm. What really just struck you?
We spent 10 days with her. Because she didn't just want to come and speak only in La Crosse, because she was flying all the way from London. And so she wanted to speak at other places, and it took me 5 months to arrange a road trip, and we took her to five other universities. So we really got to spend a lot of time with her, and I tell you, it was one of the, it really and truly was one of the best experiences of our lives to spend time with her. She's a Holocaust educator. I mean, I call myself a Holocaust educator. She is a true Holocaust educator. She's devoted her life to teaching people about the Holocaust. This is really important to me and very near and dear to my heart, because the reason that I'm teaching about the Holocaust is because I want people to understand what happens when people fail to accept other people's differences and when they do nothing when they see an injustice occur. And this is what Eva is teaching. her whole life is all about what happens when people fail to accept other people's differences. And so it was just an unbelievable 10-day experience with her. And I can't wait for this community to be able to meet her and see her and hear her speak and see her story down at La Crosse Community Theater.
As, you know, a Holocaust educator, as someone who's met many survivors, I wonder if you could talk about the difference between hearing the story of the Holocaust from someone who lived through it and just, you know, reading about it in a book or watching a video. I mean, what, talk about that difference.
When you see and hear a Holocaust educator, you are touching history. It's the closest you'll come to touching history. There isn't a comparison in reading the book and seeing that person live. You know, they're going to, on September 18th, people can see her on the stage at Viterbo telling the story. And they can go down to the La Crosse Community Theater and they can see parts of her story, very important parts of her story. And there's nothing like it. And I worry because the day is coming, like the World War II veterans, the day is coming when these survivors are going to be gone. And then we're going to be left with videos and books to learn about the Holocaust. And right now we need to seize the moment, seize the opportunity when we can see these people. Think about it. She's coming from London. She's 88 years old. It's amazing.
Sarah, I wonder what your thoughts are on you know, learning about the Holocaust and kind of experiencing it through performing it. You know, I know that you mentioned that this has been kind of an emotional experience for the cast. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that.
I think honestly, one of the most difficult things for especially the young cast is putting yourselves in a position that nobody can even imagine. Nobody can even imagine. And it's been difficult for them to kind of wrap their minds around acting or becoming in some way this person who went through this trauma, or in the other case, the young person who plays the Hitler Youth, who he is trying to put himself in a position of almost of being the bad guy. And it's hard to do that, especially for a young person. I would say the other very difficult thing that our young Ava is feeling is that I think she's completely overwhelmed with the idea of meeting this person. And I said, and I had that conversation with her yesterday, I said, look, this woman is a survivor, and you should see her face. It is all light. And you aren't going to do her wrong. What you're doing is absolutely the right thing. It's so moving and so heartfelt, and she knows that. You talked about having her watch the show and experience it from that point of view again. And I told the cast, I said, in my reading, I read that she was interested in having this sort of production happen as a way of making her family be back together again. It's kind of the only way to make it really truly happen in this lifetime, is to be able to see it on the stage. And I told these actors and young people, I said, we are doing this to teach people this important lesson and this important story, but we are also doing this to help fulfill this wish of hers to really become a family, even if only on stage again. And that's difficult. All of that is difficult, but definitely worth it.
That's Sarah Adams, director of La Crosse Community Theater's production of And Then They Came For Me. She's here with us today to talk about upcoming events, Remembering the Holocaust, with Holocaust survivor Eva Schloss. Also joining us is Daryl Klott, Holocaust educator from Viterbo University. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You know, one thing that I think makes a lot of these events maybe even more relevant to today was the events that took place last month in Charlottesville, Virginia. You know, a number of white nationalist groups, including neo-Nazis, sparked violence and unrest in that community. Sarah, I wonder how seeing those events unfold has impacted your perspective.
The thing is I see that and I recognize it all the time. I mean, that was an extreme example of how this lesson has not been learned yet. Or that people think that it is so distant that it can't possibly happen again. One of the quotes in the play, it's the actual video of Ed himself, and he said, talked about his father. His father could not believe that this was really going to happen. It was going to blow over. And he said, these are German people. These are civilized people. This cannot possibly happen here. And I fear, with sort of an explosion like that, that happened a month ago, that there are people who still think that this is a civilized community. And terrible things like that cannot happen. It won't happen, and the people won't let it happen. Well, the only way that it won't happen is that if people actually don't let it happen. And you talked about having to stand up and say the right thing when there's injustice. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, Daryl, I wonder how, you know, seeing those events in Virginia has impacted your thoughts and your perspective on being a Holocaust educator, on helping to coordinate bringing survivors here.
I just so agree with what you said, Sarah. We have not learned the lessons of the Holocaust, clearly. That happened, you know, the Holocaust ended in 1945, and here we are 2017, and we have the same things happening right in our own country. Elie Wiesel said something that I've taken as my own, and that is, thou shalt not stand idly by. And people often ask me, what can I do as a citizen here? What can I do to try to prevent what's going on around the world? And my answer is that I don't think most of us are going to end up going to Syria or other places where this genocide is still happening. But I truly believe we can make a difference in our own world by the way we treat other people and by accepting other people's differences. And that's not what's happening. And that what happened, the neo-Nazis, the skinheads, the white supremacists, it's clear that this is still going on today. We as I said, we haven't learned the lessons of the Holocaust.
How do we help our community learn those lessons? You know, how do we make sure those conversations are still happening?
I think that, well, this is why I'm on this crusade to bring Holocaust survivors to our area. Because, as I said earlier, they're going to come to an end. And we're going to be forced to use textbooks and videos and memoirs. We need to take advantage right now, people can come and see a Holocaust survivor who's going to tell her true story. People can go to the La Crosse Community Theater and watch the story unfold. That's what we need to do. We need to take advantage of this and not just sit home and watch TV or something.
You mentioned that, you know, every year we lose more survivors, you know, and those numbers are dwindling. Those people who live through those experiences are dwindling. I mean, does that create a sense of urgency for you?
Absolutely, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I've helped bring, I think it's 17 survivors to our area now, and I have to tell you, it's it's been a transformation for myself and for my husband, because working with them, dealing with them is just, it's an honor and it's a blessing. I work with Dr. Rick Kite at Viterbo, and he's Director of Ethics and Leadership, and he always says to me, we are doing blessed work. And we are. We're doing blessed work. And everybody that comes to see Eva on the stage at Viterbo on the 18th, and they come down and they see her story unfold at the community theater, and then they get to watch her stand and do a Q&A, they're all going to be affected, and they're all going to, in their minds, I think they're going to say, you know what, I need to do everything I can to prevent this kind of thing from happening again.
Sarah, I wonder, you know, you mentioned that in a way this play is, you know, is kind of remembering Eva's story. But, you know, I wonder how this play is also maybe, you know, preserves history in a way, and kind of continues to and will continue to tell the story even after, you know, Eva is gone. You know, how is this play kind of preserving that history?
I would say it preserves the history by making it present, getting a chance to be involved in these people's lives. I mean, that's what theater is all about. Talked about this last night at rehearsal, that the most important thing in theater is your connection with the person on stage. And when you're narrating, which they do some of in this play, that connection means you're connecting with the audience. And I just think that's how it's relevant right now, and that's how it will keep it relevant forever, is making that connection with the audience. And even if it isn't a first-person account, that at least we have this story written down for all times. And instead of just reading it in a book or watching it on a screen, that this sort of interactive live people on stage, there's something about that live theater that really helps people connect and feel those stories in a different way than watching it through a television screen or off the pages of a book. Theater is a very powerful art.
We've been talking with Sarah Adams, director of La Crosse Community Theater production of And Then They Came For Me, and Daryl Klott, Holocaust educator from Viterbo University, about upcoming events in La Crosse to hear from Holocaust survivor Eva Schloss. Coming up, we'll hear from Schloss herself about her experience during the Holocaust. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. More than 70 years ago, Eva Schloss and her family made a number of grueling moves to evade and hide from the Nazis. Eventually, they were found and were forced to work at the Auschwitz concentration camp. Schloss survived and has spent her life sharing about her experience through speaking events, books, and even a play. Schloss will be visiting the La Crosse area this month for events at the La Crosse Community Theater and Viterbo University. But it won't be her first visit to the Coulee region. In 2015, Schloss visited WPR studios in La Crosse to talk about her life and why remembering the Holocaust is so important. She spoke with WPR's Maureen McCollum.
So Eva, you grew up as a member of the Geiringer family, and you were born in Vienna, Austria, if I'm not mistaken. Correct. Can you talk about your childhood and maybe let us know a bit about your family?
It was a very happy childhood. I had an older brother who was a wonderful young man. We really had a very, very close relationship. And we had grandparents, my mother's parents. My mother had a sister. My grandparents had many siblings, so we had a very big extended family. And we were very, very close. And Austria is actually a beautiful country with lakes and mountains. and Vienna as well, a beautiful city with a lot of culture. And my father was a very sporty person, very enterprising. He was one of the first people who had a car in the 30s. As well, I remember when flying became I wouldn't say it was popular, but it started to become something people used to do. We did fly in an aeroplane. I was sick all the time. It was not a really pleasant experience, but I loved everything. And so we were very happy. But all this was shattered when the Nazis entered.
So eventually your family decided then to move to Amsterdam.
My father had a shoe factory, which he had inherited from his parents, and he had connections in the south of the Netherlands.
Okay.
And as soon as the Nazis came in, he went on a, so to say, business trip. And so he went, but, you know, at the time for refugees, there was no accommodation, no help. And so he said, as soon as I have found accommodation and settled, I will send for us. But by the time he was ready, we didn't get an exit visa or an entry visa into Holland. So my mother was desperate to find a way out, and we heard that you could go illegally over the border to Belgium. And once you are there, you could stay. So that is what we did, which was, of course, very dangerous. If we would have been caught, we might have been shot or picked up, and God knows what might have happened to us.
Do you remember then reuniting with your father and then eventually settling down?
Well, we lived for 1.5 years in Brussels, which was not very pleasant because the Belgians really didn't want any Jews and refugees. And it was really very tough. I didn't speak a word of French, and nobody took any notice of me. I was put in the back of the class, and I had to just try to follow. I lost all my confidence. I became very shy, and I hated to be separated from my father. And so it was really very, very difficult. And in the meantime, Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia and then Poland, and the Second World War broke out. And my father had tried all the time to get a visa for us to Holland. And eventually in February 1940, we got a visiting visa for 3 months to come to Amsterdam.
And I'm sure that was just thrilling to be able to be reunited again.
Well, that was wonderful, but it was for 3 months.
Sure.
So my father rented a furnished apartment, and after 3 months we would have had to go back to Belgium. But in a way, this was lucky, but it was, of course, terrible. In May, the German army marched into the Netherlands, and there was a very, very short war of just 5 days. The Dutch royal family escaped to England and then later to Canada. And we tried to escape, still to go to the harbor to find a boat to England, but it was too late. And so we were trapped. There was no way out anymore.
And at this time, you're about 10, 11 years old?
Yeah, I was 11 at the time.
I mean, did you feel like you were a typical schoolgirl with these extraneous situations around you? I mean, I don't know how, as a child, you even process what's going on.
Well, in Brussels, I was very unhappy. But in Amsterdam, I got immediately a bicycle. And I really looked Dutch with blonde hair and blue eyes. And the Dutch children and the people in general were very welcoming. And I made many friends right away. Everybody wanted to be my best friend. You know what girls are, little cliques. and they made me feel very welcome. And we had a nice apartment. And I thought things might look up again a bit.
So one of the things that I think makes your story relatable in the grand scheme of the Holocaust is that you when you moved to Amsterdam, your family actually moved across the street from Anne Frank's family. And I think Anne Frank is that figure that so many of us as a child, we all read that story. That helped us all kind of understand the situation that you all went through.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, as I say, Anna and me were the same age. She was actually a month younger than me, but she was actually much more grown up than I was. I was quite a childish child, and she was quite sophisticated in my eyes. She was already more interested in her hairstyles, in clothes, and I was really a tomboy. And
you were very sporty, from what I understand,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sporty, mm-hmm. And not sophisticated, really, in that way, like Anne was. And she was not at all shy. She had not experienced any discrimination because her family emigrated in 1933. Otto Frank, he always used to say, when the Nazis came to power, he said, that's not a country where I want to bring up a family, and he was able to get out in time. So Anna didn't experience any anti-Semitism, and she settled down very happily and learned the language easily. She was 4 years old, and she didn't speak any German anymore. But she introduced herself. She was a very polite little girl. And when she heard I came from Austria, she said, well, my father can speak German to you. And she took me up to her apartment, and he met her family. And we became friends, but we were, as I say, not the same type. But nevertheless, we did gossip, and we did hopscotch, and all kind of little games which you do in the street. And we were friends for 2 years. And in the meantime, of course, after the German occupied Holland, it was not like Germany or Austria, that the population was against us. It was really only the occupation, the Nazis. And so they wanted to keep the Dutch as friends, so they didn't take the measures against the Jewish population immediately. So it looked first as if nothing was going to happen, but very slowly the measures against Jewish people started to come up. And
did you experience any of those?
Oh yes, of course. But at first, perhaps the first year, it was disagreeable. It was a nuisance, but it was not life-threatening. So we were not allowed on public transport. We were not go to cinemas or swimming pools or any sport activities. So they tried to try us to isolate us from the ordinary population. I remember at the time the film, the first Walt Disney film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, came out, and all the non-Jewish children, that was all they talked about, because it was an amazing thing. And we Jewish children couldn't go and see the film. So this kind of thing, you know, we felt that quite childish thing back of it. But that is what children, and as I say, I loved swimming and things. I couldn't go to the swimming pools and things like that. But then slowly things became more difficult. Like we had to wear a yellow star. So it meant that walking in the street, we were recognizable as different. And so they arrested people. People disappeared. And then we had to leave our school and go into Jewish schools, which was by itself not bad, because now a lot of Jewish people want the children to go to Jewish school. But it was a danger, because the Germans knew there were Jewish children there which they wanted to catch. And so they went with trucks to the schools and went into classroom, told the children to go on a truck. And in the evening, the parents waited for the children to come home, and then never turned up. And they went to the police and went to the Nazi headquarters to inquire where were the children. And nobody gave them information. And they were never, ever heard of again. And only after the war did one hear they were sent to Mauthausen, horrific Austrian death camp, and they were just murdered there. And as well, people were picked up in the street and disappeared, and so it became really dangerous to do anything. So that was from 1941 to 1942, we were really scared. So every evening when we were still at home as a family, we were sort of relieved.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking with Eva Schloss. She's a Holocaust survivor, and she's the keynote speaker at Viterbo University's Teaching the Holocaust workshop. So eventually your family made the decision to split up and go into hiding?
Well, that was through another incident. One morning, about 10,000 young people got a call-up notice to go to Germany to work in German factories. That was my brother Heinz, who was 16, and as well Anna's sister Margot, and many, many, many of their friends and older people, till about 25. And that was a time when our parents decided they wouldn't send their children, but we would go into hiding. So it had a reason why we took this exact time. And when my father took us together and said, I have to talk to you seriously, we have to disappear, we have to go into hiding. I didn't get that, you know. But my father explained to us that we had to split up again. Mm-hmm. I will go with my mother and Heinz will go with him. And I didn't want to, you know, I objected. And he said, well, doing this splitting up, we have more chance that at least one part of the family would survive. And that shocked me, to speak of survival. Because then I realized it is really a matter of life and death.
So you and your mother, you moved around to different hiding spots, mm-hmm. correct?
Well, we all had to, sure. Because the Germans knew that not the 10,000 people had come, so they knew about 5,000 had gone into hiding, and they really wanted to catch mm-hmm. every Jew. It is amazing how much effort they made, how much valuable war time they spent in chasing the Jews, transporting them, building their death camps, killing them. It was a really an enormous war effort, really, which they used to destroy the Jewish people.
And ultimately, you and your mother were betrayed, and on your 15th birthday,
all four of us were betrayed by a Dutch nurse who really was a double agent, who really worked for the Nazis, but pretended she was a member of the resistance. And on my 15th birthday, we were arrested, and that was on a Tuesday, and on Friday, we were already on transport eastward.
And where were they? Can you talk about that then? Just that moment, can you remember being caught and being transported? And
yeah, well, you know, it's amazing. I remember everything very, very clearly, as if it happened yesterday.
Yeah.
We were in this camp in Westerbork, in the north of Holland, and on Friday morning we were called up and taken on transport. And, well, Holland was the most western country, and we knew going towards the east is certain death. We knew about the many, many death camps. The BBC then broadcast out to all the occupied countries in their own language. And they told, of course, the progress of the war, but as well they always mentioned the concentration camp and death camps, 300 of them in Germany and Poland, where Jewish people were systematically being gassed. And Auschwitz was always mentioned. Of course, when we went on transport, we didn't know where we were going. So they never talked to us for, you know, we were really just cattle being transported in cattle trucks. And that was a horrible journey, as you can imagine, about 80 people in one wagon, which was really a goods train or for the cattle. Just a little slit of air and nothing in it. We had to stand most of the time, 3-4 days traveling. Once a day, the doors were pulled open and bread was thrown in like you would feed wild animals.
Did people talk to one another? I mean, or would you pray?
There was some talk, of course, speculating what was going to happen and so on. And that was really the last proper conversation I had with my father and my brother. My father, with tears in his eyes, apologized that from now on he can't protect us anymore. I think that was for him, being such a wonderful family man, the worst, that he was powerless to look after his family anymore. And my brother, so he was a musician.
Your brother is a musician?
He was 4 years old. He started already to play piano. Mm-hmm. And he really was a very, very talented musician. But he obviously had other talents. And in hiding, he was cooped up in a tiny little room, was not even allowed to look out of the window. And he couldn't play any music, so he started to paint. And he created some amazing paintings. And in the cattle truck, the last conversation I had with him, he told me that before they escaped from the woman who blackmailed them, he hid the paintings under the floorboards with a notice on it. This belonged to Heinz and Erich Geiringer, and after the war, he's going to come and pick it up again. He told me that.
Did you ever find those paintings?
Yes, I did.
Wow. That must just be one of your most prized possessions, I would assume.
Yeah, well, it is.
And they were donated.
I donated them.
Oh, really?
About, it's now about 8 years ago, to the Resistance Museum in Amsterdam, because there were 30... it's really artworks, you know. And I thought, when I'm not around anymore, my family will take one or two, but as a collection, they should be really seen by many people.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guest today is Eva Schloss. She's a survivor of the Holocaust, and she's the keynote speaker at this year's Teaching the Holocaust workshop through the Turbo University. So eventually the trains... I don't know how many stops it made, but eventually your family ended up at Auschwitz.
Correct, correct. And that was, of course, which we know, the biggest death camp. So, in Auschwitz, at least, it sounds controversial, there was a selection. So not everybody was killed at arrival. But there were, of course, other camps, like Treblinka, where there was no selection. Every transport, there was a beautiful station with flower baskets, and then there was a long covered pass, where people were herded in straight to the gas chambers. So everybody who arrived there was immediately gassed. So you have no chance anymore. In Auschwitz, there was a selection, so some people had a chance perhaps to make it. So eventually we were all supposed to be killed.
And they split up your mother and your mother from your father and your brother.
Men and women were separated immediately. Auschwitz, that is the name which is a camp known, but there were actually many, many camps there. And the women camp was called Birkenau. Mm-hmm. And that's where the women went.
Did you have to work when you were there?
Of course.
What was your job? What was your mother's job?
Well, every morning the Nazis came and there was a roll call. We stood in front of the barracks and they picked people for different work commandos. And it was always physically very, very hard labor from morning early to late at night. And one of the worst jobs was... In the women camps, latrines, toilets, were just horrendous. They were just holes in a cement construction, and it didn't go anywhere. And it had to be emptied out with little mugs. and carried somewhere and buried in the earth somewhere. And that was, of course, the most horrendous job, as you can imagine, because it was full of bacteria and smell, and there was no possibility to wash afterwards. So the stench and the, oh, it was just awful. And, of course, everybody avoided to do this job, but nevertheless, I had often to do this. And this was really horrendous.
Were you in constant fear every day living there and working
there? We lived really from day to day. We had to really, in the morning when you get up, try to get through this day. We didn't think any further. Food, of course, was non-existing. We got in the morning a little mug of some liquid and in the evening a chunk of bread. Well, how long can you survive on that?
And I think I read, too, that you and your mother learned to find the carrot scraps, too, and survive off
of that. Well, we had all kind of little ideas of how to get some extra vitamins or food.
Sure.
So they had, of course, a kitchen where they cooked as well for the Nazis, because there were many, many Nazis guarding those camps. And so the end of the carrots with a little bit of green, it was on a rubbish heap. We went to pick this up, and we swapped it for sometimes a little bit of bread or something. And when they were in a good mood, they called some of us, and the water where they cooked the potatoes, they gave us. Mm. And that was the most delicious food we had ever had.
What else do you think it was that did help you and your mother to survive?
Well, a lot of it was luck. That we met, my mother met her cousin, who really saved us. And partly that we were together for a while, but not all the time. And, I was a very stubborn child. I'm a Taurus. I went really with my head through the wall. And I really wanted to live. And, I was 15, and I hadn't really lived. And I had, as I say, we had a wonderful life in Austria, and I really wanted to experience that. I wanted to have a family. That was, for me, very important. First, I wanted to have a boyfriend, wanted to get married, wanted to have a family. And with my stubbornness, I wasn't very willing to give that up. And I really, as I said, I lived from day to day hoping that the end would come and I would still be around.
Why do you think it's important for people now, today, to remember and know what happened to you and millions of others?
Well, yes, it's important to learn about this terrible period. And it is important, but you have to learn a bit of the history, how it was possible that a man like Hitler, who was a completely uneducated Austrian, how he was able to get to power. So really, teaching the Holocaust, you have to go back to the First World War. It was a big mistake of the Allied to put such terrible conditions on a country which had lost the war. And that's why it was possible for Hitler to be able to get to power, because Germany was really desperate. There was starvation, there was an enormous inflation. People had to go with a wheelbarrow of paper money to buy a loaf of bread. Millions of mark was $1, and it changed every day. The mark was worth less and less, and there was really starvation, unemployment, and many governments tried to improve the Weimar Republic, and nobody succeeded. And then came this nobody and said he has a way out, and people said, well, we are not losing anything, let him try. And he succeeded at first. And what was, of course, very important to realize as well, that when a country is so poor, communism had started in Russia in 1918, and it had spread to Germany, where, if people are poor, communism becomes powerful. And Hitler was fighting the communists. And that was a great mistake of the Western world. Everybody was more afraid of the communists than of Hitler. And they say, well, let this man fight the communists. And Churchill was really the only person who realized the danger of National Socialism and of Hitler. But the world didn't want to know.
So it's learning from the past mistakes and making sure they never happen
again.
It's
very important to learn history, what had happened, and what mistakes the Western world have made.
Eva Schloss is a Holocaust survivor who shared her experience with WPR's Maureen McCollum. Schloss will be returning to the La Crosse area later this month for events at the La Crosse Community Theater and Viterbo University. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also find more information about opportunities to see Eva Schloss in La Crosse, as well as an extended interview where she talks more about her time in Auschwitz and about her life after she was liberated. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.